It's Tuesday, September 21st. America is back, or so the president says. We start here. President Biden makes the case for diplomacy and lifts travel restrictions for vaccinated foreigners.
This is a chance for them to, you know, throw a little bit of a diplomatic gift right now.
But will it be enough to convince already skeptical allies? Halloween could be a lot less scary for kids and parents.
The reality is the FDA really has to think about risk-benefit, and in kids, that calculation is slightly different.
What a new Pfizer announcement means for the timeline for child vaccinations. And it's been a decade since the end of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Some 14,000 American service members who were pushed out of the military solely because of their sexual orientation.
How the VA is now trying to help service members hurt by the policy. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Elizabeth Schulze. Hey there, Brad's off today. You might have heard me on the show before talking about economic policy here in Washington. And well, today we've got a lot of news to cover, starting with a big day for President Biden.
America is back. Diplomacy is back at the center of our foreign policy.
The president's in New York City for the United Nations General Assembly meeting, where he's set to make a major speech about the importance of global cooperation and diplomacy.
We will repair our alliances and engage with the world once again, not to meet yesterday's challenges, but today's and tomorrow's.
This comes at a time when the Biden administration is facing quite a few diplomatic and foreign policy challenges.
Haitian migrants at the southern border.
Escalation by the Chinese government.
The worst predictions for Afghanistan's future coming true.
This is all about nuclear-powered submarines.
And there is still the pandemic. Let's get right to ABC's White House correspondent Karen Travers. Karen, what can we expect to hear from the president in this pretty high-stakes address to world leaders today?
Yeah, this is a very big week for the president in terms of foreign policy. And it's very striking because on Capitol Hill, there's so much happening with his domestic agenda. But for his part, the president's going to be focused on big, big national security issues and diplomatic issues.
We must start with diplomacy, rooted in America's most cherished democratic values.
So this speech at the UN today is going to be, really one of his biggest opportunities to hammer home his message on U.S. foreign policy. He's made trips abroad. He has met with foreign leaders overseas. But this is different.
The president's going to lay out the case for why the next decade will determine our future, not just for the United States, but for the global community.
The White House says that the central part of his remarks gets at what you're asking about. They say this is about the importance of reestablishing alliances after the last several years. Now, he'll kind of tacitly say that those alliances were damaged during the Trump administration, but certainly there are disagreements that he is having with key allies right now.
I also think it's important to note that reestablishing alliances doesn't mean that you won't have disagreements.
But, look for the president to focus very broadly on these issues. Of course, the COVID pandemic and vaccines, and really issue a call for other countries to step up their efforts to get vaccines around the world to poorer nations. No surprise, he's going to talk about climate change, and that's going to be a big focus for him over the next month or two, heading into this big climate change summit in Scotland at the beginning of November.
Right.
He's also going to be talking about cybersecurity and, of course, Afghanistan, and that's something that has driven some wedges between the United States and allies. He might get an earful behind the scenes from some of the foreign leaders he's going to meet with.
Today, I'm particularly pleased that we're also meeting just when we've made the announcement on the lifting of travel restrictions.
Yesterday, we heard the Biden administration announce it would be lifting travel restrictions for fully vaccinated foreign travelers. And Karen, the timing of this doesn't seem like much of a coincidence, given that a lot of these European countries have been pushing for this for months. So why is this such a big deal, Karen, and what restrictions exactly are being lifted?
The administration announced Monday that it will start easing these restrictions in early November. This is not right away. It's going to take a couple of weeks, they said, for countries to get get up to speed, for the airlines and the airports, just to know what this process is going to be like. But once that happens, fully vaccinated foreign nationals can fly here. Now, they must show proof of a vaccination. They must have a negative COVID-19 test in the 3 days prior to them getting on a plane to come to the United States. And they're also going to have to turn over their contact information to the CDC for contact tracing, which is a clunky, cumbersome thing that Americans haven't been very good at. So it'll be interesting to see how this would apply to Europeans, let's say, coming over here.
Will the Chinese vaccine count? Will the Russian vaccine count? AstraZeneca? Is there discussion on what exactly is vaccinated?
Yes, this is all a part of the process. It's going to be implemented again in early November.
But as you say, this is a very big deal for Europeans who have not been able to travel to the United States since the earliest days of the pandemic. You know, it was the Trump administration who imposed the travel restrictions back in March of 2020. The Biden administration kept them in place despite very significant pushback. And it got more vocal over the last couple of weeks from key European allies.
I also think it's thanks to the high levels of vaccination that there are in the United Kingdom.
But now the administration is saying we will let those people come here, tourists, family members, because it's not just people who are looking to like go to a museum or go out to dinner. They're families who have been separated throughout this process, who they say, you know, they've missed out on major life moments over the last year and a half.
Wow. So basically, people living in Europe, for example, they haven't been able to come to the U.S., even if they have family here. But Americans, we've been free to go on vacation in Italy or in France or some of these other countries for months. I mean, you've got to imagine this announcement was welcomed by those countries and by the travel industry, too.
Yeah, I mean, this, of course, comes, you know, right before the holiday travel season. So we kind of missed out on the summer travel season, and restaurants, airlines, hotels probably lost a lot of money because of not seeing that tourism business over the last few months.
We've made a lot of progress getting people to double vaccinated people to be allowed to travel to the United States. They'll be able to get there by Thanksgiving. That's a great thing.
But of course, there is politics in everything a White House does. So this timing is very notable.
What was the White House looking, or the administration looking to see in order to get to this point today to make the change? Was it the vaccination rates in Europe?
It certainly doesn't seem like in the last few days something dramatically changed in Europe. They've had higher vaccination rates than us for some time now. So why couldn't this have been announced a bit sooner?
This was an ongoing process, as you all know, that we discussed pretty extensively here.
This is a chance for them to, you know, throw a little bit of a diplomatic gift right now, because they're juggling a couple different foreign policy headaches. And this is at least a nice one. They can say, we get it. You've been pushing for this. Come back over here in the next couple of weeks.
Definitely a lot to juggle in the next few days. Thanks so much for walking us through it. As always, Karen Travers, ABC's White House correspondent. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me on.
Next up on Start Here, parents of young kids could get a big gift just in time for Halloween. And it has nothing to do with candy. That's after the break.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
One of the most concerning issues with the current uptick in COVID cases is that the number of children getting infected and hospitalized has risen exponentially.
More than 225,000 new cases reported in children in just the last week. That's 26 times higher than what we were seeing in June.
And it's especially troubling because, as of now, kids under the age of 12, they still aren't eligible to get COVID vaccines. But that could be about to change soon. yesterday, Pfizer announced its vaccines are safe and effective for kids between the ages of 5 and 11. Let's bring in Dr. John Brownstein. He's Chief Innovation Officer at Boston Children's Hospital and an ABC News contributor. So, Dr. Brownstein, just walk us through what Pfizer is saying here about the effectiveness of its vaccines in kids of that age group.
Great. Well, thanks so much for having me. I mean, we have to be careful here because this is an announcement via press release, and we still have to see the exact data. But the top line findings are really, really exciting because of the fact that what we're seeing is in the trials that were extended to children 5 to 11, and they studied over 2,000 kids, two-thirds of which got doses of the Pfizer vaccine 3 weeks apart. They actually got a third the dose. What we found is antibody levels in those age groups was very similar to what you would get in older age groups.
We're seeing the antibody response as robust. The threshold, it's meeting that protective threshold.
And what that tells us is that the protection probably from these vaccines will be very similar. And also super important is that the side effects were incredibly minimal, very similar, again, to older age groups.
My arm hurt for about 2 days. I had about 100 fever.
Those top level findings are fantastic and means that we're likely on a path to seeing these vaccines among our kids. But of course, we still have to see the raw data and really get into it to fully evaluate what these findings really mean.
Right. So that's sort of the obvious question, I think, from here. Every parent out there wants to know the answer is, what does this mean for the timeline as far as actually getting kids these shots? When are we going to see this happening?
You know, I'm in the same boat. I have a 10 and 11 year old, so I'm very curious about when that timing, what that looks like. The FDA is not going to give a timeline. They want to be incredibly certain that they have reviewed the data. They have all the information they need. I think that's important because as a parent, you know, parents are all over the country are going to be very concerned about making sure that they give a vaccine that is safe to their kids. So we want the FDA to run their process.
Pfizer is already anticipating some hesitancy among parents.
I think we have to do everything in our power to convince those individuals about the safety and effectiveness of the vaccine.
It's possible we might see this by the end of October, but we just, you know, no one is committing to an exact time frame right now.
So in theory, these kids ages 5 to 11 could start getting their shots by Halloween. That's an option based on this kind of new data.
It's definitely a time frame that is potential, but I think we still have to recognize the fact that FDA is going to take the time that it needs to be certain that they have the data required to make a decision. But yes, I think very feasible that by Halloween, we will see shots in arms in our kids.
And talk about why the FDA is really kind of taking its time on this. We've heard a lot, you know, especially with the kind of booster shot mix up with this idea that we were all going to get booster shots and now it might take a little bit longer. Is there kind of even more caution from the FDA right now on this timeline? And we're really only still talking about Pfizer, right? We're not even talking about the other companies right now yet.
Exactly. So from Moderna and Johnson & Johnson, we still are months away from seeing data from those companies. The reality is the FDA really has to think about risk-benefit. And in kids, that calculation is slightly different.
The younger you are, the better your immune system can defend you against severe symptoms of the COVID. But they are not excluded from getting seriously sick.
Now, again, we assume that these vaccines are incredibly safe. We'll have to see the data. We do have a concern about myocarditis and other potential side effects. The FDA will have to take its time, just like it's making these more refined guidances around boosters. It was very clear in the 65 older age group, not so clear yet in younger adults.
I just want to get the vaccine because I miss seeing my friends unmasked. When this is all over, I'm going to give them a hug.
But I think, you know, the message right now is for the younger kids, you know, we just need to hold off a little bit longer and practice what we know works, which is the masking, social distancing, making sure that, you know, we bring in testing as needed and to have the adults around our kids vaccinated because that really creates that protective shield that will benefit everyone.
Yeah, a great reality check. And like you said, the dose Pfizer gave to 5 to 11-year-olds in this trial, it was about a third the amount that adults get. So important to remember as this process kind of moves along. Dr. Brownstein, thanks so much for explaining it all.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's been 10 years since the policy known as Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the military was lifted. The
repeal eliminated a significant barrier to equal treatment in an effort to pursue a more equitable, diverse, inclusive,
an accessible Department of Defense. I might also add a more effective military.
This policy had meant that generations of gay and lesbian service members were unable to serve openly in the military. If they revealed their sexual orientation, gender identity, or HIV status, they risked getting discharged. And it turns out, thousands of those who were discharged haven't been receiving the veterans' benefits they're entitled to. And the VA is now trying to change that. ABC's Devin Dwyer has been reporting on this. And Devin, let's start by talking about where things stand 10 years after the end of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Yeah, Elizabeth, this is an enormous moment for the country to look back 10 years now since the end of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the moment when gay and lesbian Americans could for the first time serve openly and drop the lie that had really been asked of them for the previous 18 years.
It's a question that's plagued him since the first days of his presidency. What would Bill Clinton do about gays in the military?
We must and will protect unit cohesion and troop morale. We must and will continue to have the best fighting force in the world.
This policy, Don't Ask, Don't Tell, was something of a compromise. President Bill Clinton in 1994 set this up to try to allow gay and lesbian Americans to more comfortably serve.
This is not a call for cultural license, but rather a reaffirmation of the American value of extending opportunity to responsible individuals.
Of course, it was very controversial, very burdensome on a lot of these service members and their families.
I would have to either say, I am not a lesbian, I will have to contradict my previous statement, or I would have to say, I am a lesbian, but I'll never engage in any lesbian act.
The policy is more aptly called, let's pretend. Let's pretend gay people simply don't exist, even though we know they do.
Imagine being on the front lines in a war zone, not being able to call your partner or your children, or if you were, God forbid, killed in action, who would be notified? And these sorts of impacts weighed on generations of soldiers.
Not only betrayed, I feel disappointed, but also scared of the reality that I could be without a job.
Just because I've been burnt by this policy doesn't mean that's been taken out of who I am.
We are not a nation that says, don't ask, don't tell. We are a nation that says, out of many, we are one.
10 years now have passed, and this is a moment for reflection for so many. But a lot of righting of wrongs is still underway. And the administration, in marking this moment, is really making that clear.
So what kind of righting wrongs can be done here 10 years later? What are we talking about?
Yeah, when the Congress and the president back 10 years ago lifted this policy. They took some steps. They encouraged veterans who were separated from the military, discharged under the policy, to come forward.
No longer will our country be denied the service of thousands of patriotic Americans who were forced to leave the military, regardless of their skills, no matter their bravery or their zeal.
Here we are 10 years later. The Department of Veterans Affairs just yesterday came out and announced that they are now reaching out to some 14,000 American service members who were pushed out of the military solely because of their sexual orientation, their HIV status, their gender identity, to come forward and receive benefits that they should have received the whole time. I mean, we're talking things like home loans guaranteed by VA, pension benefits, health care benefits, burial benefits, job training benefits. All of these things were denied from more than 10,000 service members and others who were pushed out. The White House says as many as 100,000 Americans over the last 70 years have been pushed out because of their sexual orientation. And so now this policy is one that they're trying to make good, make right by these service members.
So some of this is a communication effort to try to say to these service members, okay, you weren't eligible, you didn't think you were before, we really want you to know that we see you as equals now, and even if it wasn't that way for too long.
Exactly. The VA says it's clarifying its policy. They're not creating new law here, but they are acknowledging that the stigma, even over the last 10 years, the policy has been gone 10 years, but yet they have struggled to get these benefits out to veterans who served, were pushed out under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And so now, yesterday, they're announcing a proactive review of cases, separation cases, encouraging the community to come forward, sign up, and get these benefits that they deserve.
It was June 2016 when then-Secretary of Defense Ash Carter lifted the ban on transgender service members. A year later, President Trump tweeted transgender service members should no longer serve.
I went to Afghanistan. I did all these things. I mean, what does that tell me? That tells me I'm not welcome.
You've been doing a lot of reporting on trans members in the military. And, you know, this is maybe a victory for some gay and lesbian service members, but there's still some ways to go here. You know, what is your reporting kind of shown?
Yeah, I mean, remember, we're talking about the LGB here in the military, and then there's the T. There are transgender Americans who have also served all these years. And in the administration, the Biden administration has made a real effort to try to push forward this theme of inclusion in our military.
President Joe Biden signing an executive order reversing his predecessor's ban on transgender Americans serving in the military.
I'm not worried about it being able to be done. It's a question of if that senior generation can start to embrace this in a principle-centered way.
A lot of work still to be done, but I've heard from so many members of the military, current and former, LGB and T, and all have been very proud of this moment, the progress that's been made.
The biggest myth is that we're something other than an ordinary sailor.
But there's still a lot of work to do, particularly with transgender service members, not just with a culture of inclusion, Elizabeth, but also with those benefits that they deserve for being out there serving their country.
Such an important story. I know you're going to stay on it, Devin. Thanks for walking us through this today.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, the stock market just had its worst day in months, and there's still plenty of uncertainty ahead. One Last Thing is next.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
And one last thing. Monday was not a good day to look at your 401k.
September is living up to its reputation as being the worst month for the stock market all year.
Trust me, as someone who loves checking the markets and economic data, I just wouldn't look now. And here's why. The S&P 500 dropped nearly 2% in its worst trading day since May. There are a couple of big factors here at home playing into the stock market uncertainty right now. And for traders, uncertainty is the name of the game if you're looking for big price swings. One factor is the Federal Reserve.
We will be carefully assessing incoming data and the evolving risks.
The central bank, which is meeting starting today, could soon announce that it'll start pulling back on some of the stimulus that it's been pumping into the economy during the pandemic-induced recession. Then there's a lot of uncertainty around the debt ceiling.
We believe we have to renew the debt ceiling, and we are going to move forward and get it done. And we believe it will ultimately be done in a bipartisan way.
This sounds wonky, but we're literally talking about the U.S. government hitting the ceiling on the amount of money that it can borrow.
How would that impact you? Well, Social Security checks could be delayed, as could veteran benefits. Not to mention your 401k would likely lose value because the threat of a default would disrupt the markets.
The debt limit is about $28 trillion. That's 28 followed by 12 zeros.
Defaulting on the national debt should be regarded as unthinkable.
Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is giving increasingly alarming warnings that the government won't be able to pay its bills in a matter of weeks unless Congress takes action to suspend or to raise that debt limit.
Failing to increase the debt limit would have absolutely catastrophic economic consequences.
And in a world of uncertainty, members of Congress coming together to take action, especially before the 11th hour, well, that's one thing pretty certain not to happen. There's more on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Elizabeth Schulze. Brad's back tomorrow. I'll see you later.